From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 20th day of July, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And then a bit later in the program, we'll look at the agricultural weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. Along the way today, I'll tell you about next week's herbicide resistance field day. Aaron Hager will be here, weed scientist at the University of Illinois, and it all happens on this Friday edition of Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. In fact, we'll have Commodity Week up there by about 6 o'clock this evening. You can listen early if you'd like at willag.org. Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. On this Friday afternoon, futures were higher. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat at $9.43 1/4, up 8 1/4 for the day. December at $9.48 1/4, up 13 3/4. The hard red in Kansas City, a settlement price there at $9.40 1/2, and the SAPs up 2.5 cents. Corn pit now from Chicago, nearby September at $8.27 1/2, up 19 3/4. December at $7.94 1/2, 16 cents higher. The March at $7.81 1/2, up 11 cents. In May, corn at $7.79 1/4, up 12 1/4 cents on the day. July contract to close at 2 o'clock at $7.74 1/2, up 14 1/4. In December of next year, at $6.19 1/4 on the close, up 10 1/4 cents. August soybeans, $17.59, up 25 1/4. September at $17.14 1/2, up 23 1/4. And November soybeans at $16.84 a bushel, up 31 3/4. January contract, 29 higher at $16.63. The March at $15.44, up 17 1/4. Next year's May at $14.54 3/4, up 4 1/4 as well. And the November of 2013 at $13.03 3/4 cents, 8 3/4 higher. The September is the outlier, by the way. I just caught this down, 28 3/4 there at $13.49 1/2. Bean meal futures in the August at $5.42, up 10.40 on the afternoon. Bean oil at $54.40, unchanged for the day. Live cattle futures, October contracted $123.10, down $1.30. September feeders at $138.52 1/2, down the $3 limit. And October lean hogs at $79.80, down 20 cents. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey there, Todd.
A couple of things. First, you'll be on Commodity Week this week. Our guest is from FC Stone, Dave Smolt. We haven't talked to him before, but it looks like that one should be a good one because he takes care of about 500 million-gallon plants worth of ethanol, so that should be fun. And then next week, you've got a couple of Outlook meetings coming up pretty soon. You've been talking about them in one of our underwriting schedules. Are dates and everything right on those?
Yeah, we had a little bit of a mix-up earlier in the week. It's the 25th and 26th. Everything sounds good on the advertisement. We're going to look at both the short-term, next three-week horizon, and then the next three-month horizon. There's going to be some guests there. One of the vice presidents from Straits Financial is going to be there, talk about the clearing situation, talk about what's happening in the futures industry in light of the PFG best and in light of what happened with John Corzine's company. So I think it's very worthwhile for current clients to come and also prospective clients and subscribers as well. But as far as the Commodity Week, I was very excited to get your email because I think the RINs issue that we talked about last year during the holidays, I remember you and I having a discussion about that. I think that's going to be a huge point of topic of discussion as we get into this week's Commodity Week, because that could be a big, big demand feature to the market here in the next 3 months.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk about that during Commodity Week, and then I sent you a note a little bit earlier, actually, all the Commodity Week panelists and guests with a couple of blurbs that Daryl Good had written on Monday about how to handle some of the crop insurance figures. Did you read through that, and what did you make of it?
I did, and that's identical to what I've been sending out the last couple weeks. I think we're all on the same page. I think we're trying to prevent any more pitfalls from hitting our producer clients at this point, Todd, and I think that with the producers that have the revenue protection and did not take that harvest price exclusion and can benefit from a fall price that's higher, they have a natural call position essentially in the market as we get into the October, the month of October, where both the corn and bean prices are going to be refigured. But we don't have the downside potential covered, and I think that's where a lot more banks have been calling this past week and talking to me on behalf of their clients to try and set up something to to get either futures positions in place or bought puts in place. That's exactly what Dr. Good was talking about. I think we got to be watchful and really protect from these potential pitfalls or loss of potential revenue when we already know that in our fields we've got a big potential loss of revenue staring us in the face.
Yeah, and he was talking about averaging them in over time. So
right.
And starting now.
Right. That's exactly right. I think this week did show us that the beans did take over as a leader to the upside
right.
as far as the price action. And we got a 9 to 10% gain on the week for November beans, about a 7% gain on the week for corn. So that's kind of how I measure that. And I would say the beans need to keep that bull running next week. And I feel that especially after this week's trade. And the way the wheat and the corn tended to flatten out, and I don't mean the September corn, but more the December corn. I think my charts are accurate, but you might want to check this. But the record high I show in these corn was back in June of 08 of 7.99 and a quarter. We never got through that. We never even tested it this week. And I found that very surprising, given that September made new all-time highs. So a lot of the technicals look a lot different in the corn versus the beans after this week. The bean-corn ratio would say it's time to start buying beans again if you're just a strict chartist. And I think the wheat support that the corn has been getting so much impetus from and so much support from here the last 3 weeks may be starting to run out because of the fact that the close today was back below the August 2011 high. So you've got fundamentals of exports that also support that mindset, and you had another poor week of ethanol production.
Yeah, so you've got the old high at 7.99 and a quarter, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, and this week we went to 7.99 in the December contract.
Exactly.
And so we got there, but we didn't really push to see what would happen to us.
Not given what the September was able to do, not just earlier this week, but the fact that the September really came roaring back after the midday weather models today. And I think here again, that was maybe some corn-wheat spread unwinding that took a hold of the September corn early on and then kind of released it after the midday weather models came out. But I thought that if we were going to be able to bust through that 825 level again in sub-corn, that Deese would be able to punch through and clear and put an 8 handle on the number for Deese futures at the end of the week. So it's not a negative fundamental, but I think it's a neutral fundamental, and that's what we're looking for at this point.
Okay, so let's talk about what you think the trade is trading, either for yield or total production, and we can start with yield, I suppose. And they're slightly different, but USDA the last time around, not too long ago, was at, what, 146?
Yeah.
The trade is where?
I think the trade is probably mid-130s at this point. Middle of the week, there was a Bloomberg or Reuters story talked about that some of the midpoint ranges for some of the private trade guesses are around that 135, 136 area. I think that's fair given what I've talked to people in Chicago about when it comes to the corn. Getting up to this $8 level, we were also up to this $8 level, obviously, back in that June 08 time period like we were just talking about in Deese futures. Last time we were up there in that June 08 time period, USDA gave us a 673 carryover. So at $8 futures, we're probably running at around a 675, 650 carryover would be my guess, and that would plug into like a 135 yield.
You think that's low enough?
I don't know. I think I'll go this far. I think that because of the ethanol and the livestock, the fact that the feeder cattle corn ratio is down within 1% of where it was in 2008, given that the hog corn ratio is down below 11% and very close to where it was in 98 and also in 08, I think that we're at a point now, given this week's prices in corn, that maybe demand is falling almost or at the same pace that the supply is at this point, so that total supply and total demand are pretty much keeping up with one another as far as declines when it comes to the corn. Wouldn't say that for the beans yet, but I would say that for the corn, in my opinion.
Okay, so I want to come back to the feeder cattle and do it on kind of a consumer related issue,
just
because we know that meat prices should be higher by the time we get to January. When's a good time to go ahead and buy beef and pork and poultry, do you think?
Well,
if you're going to buy a whole beef or
right,
half a pork,
I think the time to buy would be when the seasonal low in feeder cattle usually comes about, and that's usually that September October time frame. And so I would be looking at just before the Thanksgiving holiday when we have the big turkey season. I think that's probably when you want to buy your red meat, and I think that's what I'm looking for, at least for my family, is if I'm going to buy some extra pork and extra beef, it's probably going to be during that turkey season where the turkeys and the chickens and the poultry are so well bid, but the red meat kind of suffers. I think you definitely want to do it before Christmas, ham buying season, and before you get into the roast season in the wintertime.
Yeah, and set yourself up for the year, because it'll be a kind of a long year at the meat counter.
It's
going to
be tough.
Store.
And you bring up a huge point, because both the United Nations and the USDA went on the record with the Financial Times this week about another food crisis. They said, no, it's not going to be the same because we've got more rice and more wheat. Well, that may be for those countries and those people that consume wheat and rice for their caloric intake, but for the meat consumer, the red meat and poultry consumer, it could be worse than what it was in 08 because we don't have that bean meal, we don't have the DDGs, we don't have the corn that we need. So, and right up at the top of that list, next to countries like the United States and Brazil and Europe, is China. They've become very reliant upon pork. And I actually saw a blurb today that I think needs to be watched, and that is, we're looking at a point where these emerging markets like China, if their food price ag inflation takes over their overall inflation, that may limit them in terms of being able to move their monetary policy to try and stimulate their overall economy. And that's going to be one of the big things we talk about at the seminars next week.
Okay, so we know that liquidation in the livestock sector is going to come, and has already started, I take it, right?
I think so. The USDA would say not. Their sow liquidation or their sow slaughter numbers that just came out this afternoon, as of the week ending July 7th, sow slaughter was down 2.7%. Right now, USDA is saying we haven't seen it yet.
Okay. And then the other thing that will happen, I guess, is that RINs may or may not come into use. Can you talk about that very quickly?
Very quickly. They were a big, big feature back in the 08-09 market. That's when the prices really shot higher in the RINs because essentially the ethanol blenders said, we don't have the actual corn ethanol to blend. We're going to go ahead and use these paper products in lieu of that to meet our mandate. So it is a legal way to bypass actually blending that production into meeting the mandate for oxygenate fuel. And if we're looking at an 08 scenario again, why wouldn't the RINs jump again like they did in 08?
Have you been able to watch the price? I know they're traded, but I don't know where exactly. So
yeah, they have been up. I think they were up 4 cents this week. Yeah, 13 RINs surged this month. This note is saying trebling about 4 cents a gallon over the past 3 weeks.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks,
we'll
Todd.
Talk to you in a bit for Commodity Week. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana.
In agricultural news, world markets are not yet facing a crisis of the kind seen in 2007-2008, when high food prices sparked riots in some poorer countries. Although soaring grain prices fueled by an intense U.S. drought are a cause for concern. That's according to the UN's Food Agency. U.S. corn prices have surged more than 55% in 5 weeks, as crops continue to wilt under the worst drought in the Midwest since 1956. Little rain is expected in the next few weeks. In response to the statewide drought, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn has so far requested that 33 counties, including Champaign, get emergency aid from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Champaign County Farm Bureau President Lyndon Warfel says Congress needs to pass a comprehensive farm bill so that farmers can get crop insurance as soon as possible.
The lack of certainty in agriculture is a huge problem because the risks have steadily increased with the increased costs of production and the increased prices of corn and soybeans. And that means insurance gets more and more important.
One of the holdups in passing the new farm bill is disagreement in Congress about the size of cuts to the food stamp program, which makes up 80% of the farm bill. 13th District Republican candidate Rodney Davis says aggressive tracking of purchases by poor people under the program is important.
The waste and fraud, everybody talks about getting rid of. We can find out where that's at and actually address it. And when we do, then we're going to be able to talk final numbers of how we can reduce the cost of the food and nutrition program.
Democrat David Gills says the more than $16 billion in proposed cuts in the U.S. House is too steep and would devastate families.
There is a lot of hunger in this congressional district, throughout the country certainly, but right here in Illinois 13, people have had trouble finding work and their children going to bed hungry.
Gill and Davis say renewing crop insurance provisions is a crucial part of the safety network for agricultural producers, especially during this year's devastating drought. Independent candidate John Hartman is also running against them in the new 13th district. A group of workers also feeling the stresses of the drought are migrant workers. Every year, thousands of migrant workers come to Illinois to detassel corn and harvest crops. Oftentimes, they don't make enough money to feed themselves and their families. Miguel Caberlin is an attorney with the Illinois Migrant Legal Assistance Project in Chicago. He says he's concerned workers who aren't spending as much time in the field because of the heat won't be making as much money as they initially thought.
We understand that there are certain things you can't plan for as far as drought and things go, but I'm hopeful that employers out there will try to make good and make sure that workers at least go home with enough money in their pocket that it made the trip worthwhile.
Caberlin says migrant workers can sue their employers if they aren't paid the amount they were promised. He also says there are social service programs that can provide assistance to migrant families. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Bayer is hosting Respect the Rotation Field Days this month and next throughout the Midwest. It's the company's effort to promote products other than glyphosate for control of weeds and management practices that can keep those products usable. Rotating herbicides with different modes and sites of action can keep weed populations from building up resistance to herbicides. University of Illinois weed scientists are speaking at several of the planned events. Aaron Hager says the Tuscola, Illinois Field Day will be hosted on a site where he's been doing research on glyphosate resistance for a few years.
And so this site is one that we're heavily involved with. We have approximately 8 acres in small plot research right there. And the field tour will be held in conjunction with Bayer Crop Sciences and also a couple of other industry sponsors. Valent is partnering with us this year, as well as BASF. And the idea of the tour will be to bring farmers, retail applicators, seed industry folks, basically whoever would like to attend, on site and show them some of the plots that we've actually been working on this year. There'll actually be 4 different stops highlighting various presentations by 4 different university speakers. And those speakers would be from the University of Illinois, from Southern Illinois University, and from the University of Tennessee.
Hager's hopeful each of the presentations made in Tuscola, the other Respect the Rotation events around the nation too, will take up a unique aspect of herbicide resistance.
But hopefully, collectively, participants after the tour stops and after seeing some of the plots will have a better appreciation, a better understanding of just how important and how serious the occurrence of glyphosate resistance in various weed species is across much of Illinois right now.
The whole of the nation, for that matter. Bayer Crop Sciences will host Respect the Rotation events in Tuscola, Illinois in July, Mount Olive, North Carolina, August the 8th, Collinsville, Illinois on the 15th, Brownsburg, Indiana on the 23rd of August, and in Ellsworth, Iowa, September the 11th. Here are the details of the Tuscola event scheduled for Tuesday, July the 24th.
The events actually begin at the parking lot in the Assembly Hall parking lot. Folks can meet there, they can leave their vehicles there, and there will actually be tour buses that will take folks from the Assembly Hall parking lot out to the tour location. So everybody can ride in reasonable comfort, leave your car parked there, and ride out and then ride back in a tour bus instead of everybody having to find parking spaces out there on their own. The times of departure would be, I believe, first bus will depart the Assembly Hall parking lot about 7:30 or so in the morning. And then the second tour bus will leave about, somewhere around 9 or 9:30 from the Assembly Hall parking lot. The time that it would take to get there would be sufficient that by the time the second bus gets to the tour site, the first group should pretty much be through all the stops and heard all the presentations. From that point on, the buses will take the participants out who want to go. We'll take them out to the Bayer Crop Sciences Research Farm. There'll be some additional discussion there on the topics of resistance. At the noon hour, lunch will be provided for all the participants. And then following lunch, there'll be special presentations by Dr. Bob Wolf, who will be discussing some of the techniques, technologies to try to minimize the problems associated with off-target herbicide movement.
Again, the University of Illinois Bayer Crop Sciences Herbicide Resistance Respect the Rotation Field Day is next Tuesday morning. Buses leave the Assembly Hall parking lot at 7:30 and 9:30 a.m. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon. Jim Angel at Illinois State Water Survey, located right here in Urbana-Champaign on the U of I campus at the Prairie Research Institute, is with us to look at the weather forecast. Jim, any rain that you can see on the map at the moment or possibility at all?
Well, good afternoon, Todd. The there is the National Weather Service is calling for a chance of drizzle before 4 p.m. And, you know, I really don't see much of anything on the radar, and I haven't seen anything on the windshield or anything like that. I think there's maybe a little bit, if you look at the radar returns, that maybe some scattered, like I said, drizzle, but nothing more. And, boy, you know, that doesn't really help us out much. We need a lot more than a drizzle. But it is nice to have slightly cooler temperatures for a change. That was a nice break today. So right now I think we're at about 80 degrees or so, or 79 degrees at Willard Airport. So a little nicer today, but then it starts to warm back up tomorrow, high at 92, and kind of work our way back up to upper 90s by early next week, and by Monday and Tuesday, high around 98. Really not much of another chance of any kind of rain, maybe until about Tuesday or Wednesday. There's some indications there might be about a 30% chance, but that's not much. That's not much to count on it, and probably it's going to be the same story, just scattered thunderstorms and nothing very widespread or very organized. If you go out to the 6 to 10-day and 8 to 14-day forecast, those are also showing below normal precipitation and above normal temperatures. And the new outlook for August just came out this week, and it's saying the same story, a higher risk of above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. So it's just kind of a continuation of what we've seen so far, and so it's just pretty grim news out there.
When you look at both topsoil and subsoil moisture levels, from a climatological perspective, how tough is it across the state of Illinois?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. You know, the USDA reported that most of the soils in Illinois, topsoil and subsoil, was either dry or very dry for this last week. And we have some measurements around the state that we do at about 19 sites. And those are all indicating that, at least in the top 20 inches where we have good measurements at, that the soil moisture is virtually depleted at that point. So there really isn't anything to work with right now. I mean, we need the rains immediately to get any kind of relief. And it'll probably take a good 6 or 7 or 8 inches of rain to get the soil moisture back up to where it should be for this time of year. So it's, you know, even these the lucky people that got an inch or two of rain this last week, that's just a temporary thing. That's not going to turn things around.
Jim, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again in a week.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey. The Prairie Research Institute joins us here on a Friday afternoon. Be sure to visit us on willag.org. We'll post Commodity Week there with FC Stone's Dave Smolt about 6 o'clock this evening. You have a good weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.